I hear people talking right about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a far and out deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Love this song and sing it, be warned. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Run down with life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. .com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, excuse me, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. The courts are our mortal enemies in Canada and often in the United States. The new nationalist party that won decisively in Quebec in October is the Coalition Avenir Québec, or very roughly the coalition to move Quebec forward. But anyway, they had promised a reduction in Quebec's annual intake of immigration by about 20%. Not nearly enough, but better than nothing, and certainly a step in the right direction. They'd also insisted that newcomers are going to have to be selected according to how they will fit in. Primarily, can they speak French, which makes sense in a French-speaking province? Can they adhere to Quebec values? Which basically would be suggest civilized behavior, and particularly not wearing, face masks or burqas or niqabs or hijabs for women, etc. In other words, can they fit in culturally? Thirdly, and again, a very valid criteria. Do they have a marketable skill? That is, a skill that's necessary, that's needed. Now, upland goat herders, herding may in fact be a skill, but it's probably not in high demand in Quebec. Anyway, totally sensible. Well, the courts are doing everything to subvert this. And here's the latest from today's National Post. Quebec Superior Court has issued a temporary injunction ordering the provincial government to resume processing more than 18,000 immigration applications. The decision, Monday, by Justice Frédéric Bachon, forces the province to continue to render decisions on cases it wanted to throw out as it moved to overhaul the selection process for newcomers to the province. Simon Jolin Barrette, immigration minister with the Coalition Avenir Quebec government, tabled Bill 9 on February the 7th. The bill aims to allow the province to be more selective with immigrants, ensuring they speak French, respect Quebec values, and meet labor needs. Lawyers representing the Quebec Association of Immigration Lawyers, you see, the mortal enemies of protecting our people, argued last Friday the minister had acted illegally by not following the laws currently in place. They said the matter was clearly urgent. The decision is valid for 10 days. The limit of such a temporary injunction, the parties will go back to court to argue about. So, in other words, I guess the lawyers are saying that the Quebec government can't implement the new rules until they're fully passed. Well, okay, I guess. There are times when you shake your head and wonder, for whom do our members of parliament govern? Whom do they govern for? Is it us? Or is it minority groups? Repeal Sikh Heritage Month bill. Most Canadians are probably not aware that on November the 7th, 2018, Parliament voted to celebrate Sikh Heritage Month nationally in April of every year. That observation starts this April. I wonder, did any member of Parliament speak against it? Did any member vote against it? I only ask. I don't know. The big question for most Canadians should ask is why. According to Sikh MP Suk Dhaliwal, who introduced this bill, here's why. By designating the month of April as Sikh Heritage Month, the Parliament of Canada would provide an opportunity to reflect on, celebrate, and educate future generations about the inspirational role that Sikh Canadians have played and continue to play in communities across the country. Aren't we just bully? An inspirational role? What do you mean inspirational role? They came to Canada to better themselves, not to inspire us. By hook and by crook, they got into this country. They're not here to inspire anybody. And acts of selfishness are simply pushing themselves forward. Really, in my opinion, doesn't cut it. Anyway, I'm actually reading a commentary by Charles Murphy of Immigration Watch Canada, so I'd better leave the words to be his. The next question today you should ask is this. Is it true that Sikhs played an inspirational role in Canada? The evidence clearly says that they did not. The following is a list of 8 reasons why Parliament should never have even considered the celebration of Sikh Heritage Month. Number 1. The behavior of some of the earliest Sikhs to arrive in Canada aboard a Japanese named ship called the Panama Maru in 1913 was a foreshadowing and a warning. It demonstrated Sikh willingness to use fraudulent documents. It also showed their attitude that they had a right to enter Canada and that Canada had no right to oppose their entry. The Panama Maru event helps to explain much of what happened in the much larger Kamagata Maru incident in 1914. Sikhs repeatedly used the Kamagata Maru event to proclaim victim status. They omit many facts, including the fact that they assassinated a Canadian immigration agent, William Hopkinson. The Panama Maru, that was a ship, carried 56 East Indians to Canada. Most of the passengers on the Panama Maru had not lived in Canada previously, but falsely claimed that they had. They produced fake money order receipts, time cards, etc. to substantiate their claims. Immigration authorities allowed 17 to land, those physically recognized to have been here before. But they detained 39 of the 56. A board of inquiry looked into the case and ordered that the 39 be deported. But litigious East Indians in Canada determined to make the Panama Maru a test case, which, if won, would open Canada's doors to huge numbers of Sikhs and other East Indians. Their lawyer, J. Edward Byrd, appeared before Justice Dennis Murphy, the author of a royal commission which had investigated Chinese immigration fraud. He ruled against the East Indians. Undaunted, Byrd then went to Chief Justice Gordon Hunter, who was notorious for appearing drunk in court and who was a clear embarrassment both to the bench and to the government. Hunter allowed the 39 to stay. Worse, four of the 39 who'd been ordered deported for medical reasons escaped from detention and could not be found. After this humiliating incident, Canadian immigration authorities undoubtedly resolved not to let Sikhs humiliate them again, particularly those on the Komagata Maru, which would land a year later, or attempt to land. Second reason. Although many years of Sikh immigration peace followed, the Singh decision of 1985 signaled the beginning of Sikh-caused refugee and immigration chaos in Canada. Between 1977 and 1981, six citizens of India, all Sikhs with the surname Singh, plus a Guyanese citizen of Indian heritage, made separate refugee claims in Canada. This should have been seen as another warning. Often these things are missed. This should have been seen as another warning. In making their claims, the Sikhs continue a Sikh pattern of using litigation to break down any barriers to Sikh entry to Canada. Initially, all seven were denied entry, but they used a loophole in Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms, particularly the freedom, the definition of the word everyone, to include non-Canadians such as them, and remained in Canada. In doing so, they turned Canada's refugee system into a quasi-judicial body, which soon became mired in tens of thousands of claims, most of them illegitimate. Those claims have cost Canada billions of dollars and saddled Canada with people who have contempt for Canada. Is this supposed to be an example of the Sikh heritage that Canadians are expected to celebrate every April? The Sikh bombing, third reason, the Sikh bombing and murder of 329 people aboard an Air India plane in 1985 should have removed Canada to place severe restrictions on Sikh immigration, but it did not. The bombing plot, which originated in Vancouver, caused the largest mass murder in Canadian history. Up to this point, in 2019, the Sikhs have placed Trudeau in their collective pocket. Most important, none of the Sikh ringleaders has paid for the crime. Is this another example of the Sikh heritage that Canadians are supposed to celebrate every April? Reason number four. A major reason why the Sikh bombers have never been held to account is the culture of intimidation by militant Sikhs over other Sikhs. The identities of the Sikh perpetrators are quite likely known even by the Sikh members of Trudeau's cabinet, not to mention by hundreds of other Sikh politicians and professionals. However, all these Sikhs have remained silent. As a result, hundreds of the relatives of the bombing victims, most of whom were not Sikhs, incidentally, Sikhs had been warned not to travel on any Air India plane from Canada, because Indian intelligence knew this bombing was coming, or knew something was coming, and warned the Canadian authorities, who, no, that's too much for us. That sounds like discrimination. We don't want that stuff, do we? Until the criminals are behind bars, the word Sikh will be a dirty word to those relatives and to millions of other Canadians. Most likely, Canadians want nothing to do with those Sikhs, let alone celebrate Sikh heritage. Reason number five. Young and older male Sikhs have been significantly involved in drug industry criminality in Canada. However, when drug incidents are reported, our treacherous Canadian Broadcasting Corporation and other media make a point of not disclosing the names of Sikh murderers or the Sikhs who are murdered. Most Canadians have come to expect that the CBC or other media begrudgingly reveal the names of the criminals. Those names will be ones such as Parvinder, Balwinder, or some other Sikh name. In Metro Vancouver recently, Sikhs complained that they needed more police to deal with drug dealing and drug gang killings. Ironically, the truth is that many people in Metro Vancouver think that Metro Vancouver does not need more police. It needs fewer Sikhs and less Sikh immigration. Metro Vancouver residents are also probably thinking that Sikh parents had to finally accept a Canadian cultural trait, that of being responsible for their offspring, not expecting the government to do the job for them. Again, is this very visible Sikh cultural defect what MP Dhaliwal wants all Canadians to celebrate every March? Reason 6. Canadians have become increasingly fed up with aggressive immigrants, both Sikhs and others, who demand that Canada adapt to immigrant customs. So far, no group has made as many demands for exemptions from Canadian laws as Sikhs. In fact, Sikhs' demand to wear their turbans and their kirpans have been endless. If Sikhs really want to retain their customs, why are they here? Why would Canada want to create another political mess such as the Punjab in Canada? And an environmental hazard such as India in Canada through relentless Sikh immigration. For a description of India's environmental disaster, there's another report by his Immigration Watch Canada. 7. Sikhs have grossly abused Canadian Prime Minister Jean Chrétien's decision to create an additional Canadian consulate in India's Punjab. It has become notorious for being the fraud capital of all Canada's consulates and embassies in the world. Tens of thousands of Sikhs have entered Canada as a result of fraud there. In other words, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Sikhs have entered Canada illegally. Why would Canada want to celebrate being defrauded by these people? The numbers are not an exaggeration. At recent Sikh festivals in Vancouver and Toronto areas, some Sikh leaders boasted that up to 500,000 Sikhs attended. Who else besides Trudeau would want to celebrate a heritage of shameless fraud? And reason number 8. Political accommodation to the Sikhs has reached new levels of degradation under Trudeau. It is incredible that not a single member of Parliament voted against the Sikh Heritage Month bill. If they are unaware of the repeated Sikh negative actions against Canada, they should resign. According to statistics, Sikhs comprise a little under 1% of Canada's population, but they comprise 16% of Trudeau's cabinet. In making these appointments, white privilege? Maybe Sikh privilege, but not white privilege. In making these appointments, Trudeau insulted Canadians of all backgrounds. Unbelievably, he went a step further. He appointed a rookie Sikh MP as his House leader, a position usually held by an experienced member of Parliament. The other Sikh MPs will not win awards for being Canadian patriots or for having brains. For example, Trudeau's Sikh defense minister claimed in an inferiority complex delusion that he was the leader of an important Canadian military operation, that was Operation Medusa, when he served in the Canadian Army in Afghanistan. In fact, he played only a minor role. The same character presented a large, curved East Indian sword to the American general as if it were a Canadian-style weapon. In private, the Americans must have laughed. That Sikh minister has a serious identity problem. He seems to think he is representing the Punjab, not Canada. Delusional Sikhs belong to other parties also. To summarize, is it sane to accept Sikh political degradation as part of Canada's heritage? This list could be 10 times as long. To put the matter bluntly, the passing of the Sikh Heritage Act in November of 2018 is an example of how Canada's Parliament has descended into the most degrading act of political sodomy and bootlicking. Our Canadian Broadcasting Corporation and many politicians are proud to engage in such activity. But to recover Parliament's dignity, here is what Parliament must do immediately. 1. Repeal the Sikh Heritage Month Bill. In its place, introduce new bills to protect Canada's French and UK heritage and protect Canada's borders. I think that's a very hard-hitting and very good commentary. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. I don't like this guy. This guy's Jason Kennedy. He's the leader of the Conservative Party. Actually, it's called the United Conservative Party in Alberta. That's a provincial party. And they're gearing up for an election, provincial election this May. Anyway, Jason Kenney was for a long time the immigration minister under the Conservative
government of Stephen Harper. However, he was a huge fan of open borders, and while he did accomplish a couple of things, he basically was a big fan of massive third world immigration, and of course he is a big critic on a personal level of yours truly. Okay, well, what's Jason done now? Well, because of the downturn in oil, because of the anti-energy policies of the federal government and the provincial government of British Columbia, and the anti-pipeline agitation of many quote environmental groups and some Indian tribes, Alberta's oil patch is in dire straits. High unemployment. Many men are literally at their wits' end. They've long since run through their unemployment insurance. And there just are no jobs in Alberta. But they continue to bring in low-level, cheap, temporary foreign workers and immigrants from various third world places, including the Philippines. What's happening here? What does Jason Kenney, who hopes to replace the socialist Premier of Alberta, Rachel Notley, in the upcoming, in the May provincial election, what does he offer? He wants to increase immigration to Alberta. This man's insane. Anyway, here's a report from the Rebel Media and Ezra Levant.
And all of the above is the only way I can process the bizarre Jason Kenney announcement today. I'm not in Alberta as much as I'd like to be these days. I'm here in exile in Toronto. I think I'm a Torontonian now. But I get out west fairly often. And all of the above is the only way I can process the bizarre Jason Kenney announcement today. I'm not in Alberta as much as I'd like to be these days. I'm here in exile in Toronto. I think I'm a Torontonian now. But I get out west fairly often, and I talk to Albertans every day, both old friends and members of the public and viewers. And I have to think if you were to knock on 1,000 doors in Alberta and say, what's the key issue in this provincial election? I gotta tell you, I don't think a single person would say, you know, with this provincial election, what we need? We need more immigration. What? I doubt one person would say that, but that is what Jason Kenney's announcement today was. Here, listen.
We need to use the power of immigration as one strategy to restore investor confidence and to build new businesses, to create prosperity for all Albertans. During my tenure as minister, I quadrupled Alberta's allotment under the provincial nominee program, which helped to double immigration levels to Alberta from about 21,000 to about 42,000 new permanent residents a year. The only province, I believe, that does not focus immigration on less populated, like rural regions, and nor do we use the ability to nominate people for work permits to get them here faster before they get permanent residency.
What? Immigration is a federal matter. It's not a provincial matter other than some tweaks. I mean, the main point here, though, is that there's massive unemployment in Alberta right now. It's worse than any other province in Canada other than those in the Atlantic. Alberta's unemployment is worse than Quebec. It's worse than Ontario. That means there are lots of unemployed men and women right now who are actually the most skilled workforce in the country. Let me say that again. Alberta's unemployed people are the most skilled unemployed people in Canada. They're not out of work because they did something wrong. They're not out of work because they don't have the skills. They're out of work because Rachel Notley and Justin Trudeau. There is no shortage of workers. There is a shortage of jobs. And Jason Kenney wants to bring in more workers before our existing Albertan unemployed or hired, and to rural parts? What does that even mean? Is this even a provincial election platform? It's so weird. It sounds like Jason Kenney just took some of his old files from when he was a parliament, the cabinet minister, and he's repurposing them. Immigration in a provincial campaign? By the way, it doesn't even make any sense. Canadians don't want more immigration. Here's the Angus Reid survey from a few months ago. Literally only 6% of Canadians want higher immigration. That's that black line at the bottom there. 49%, the red line, want less. 31%, the blue line, say, well, keep it as it is, maybe. So it's 8-1 want less immigration as to more. It's not broken down by province here, but I'm pretty sure support for more immigration is even lower in Alberta. How could it not be? Alberta already has plenty of people who are looking for work right now, bringing in cheaper foreign labor to undercut them helps no one, or even bringing in more skilled labor. How does that help out our own unemployed skilled labor in the province now? This is a solution in search of a problem. It doesn't make sense. And listen to Kenny's justifications of it. Here, listen for a bit here.
The goal will be to end large backlogs, speed up processing times, proactively attract talented newcomers from overseas, welcome job-creating entrepreneurs, and encourage settlement in rural Alberta, which needs population the most.
His first two goals there are really weird. Fix the immigration backlog and speed up processing. How is that an Alberta provincial issue? Fix the backlog, as in there are foreigners who really want to come here, and they're not getting enough service quickly enough. That's his top priority. It's the first thing he mentions, making things convenient for foreigners. And the second one, speeding up processing times. That's not the problem. The problem is that Alberta has nearly 7% unemployment, and it's skilled workers in Alberta who can't find work. And he's really excited about bringing in foreigners faster. Who came up with this? Bring in job creators? Okay, good idea. I'll believe it when I see it. But that's not the pitch here. The pitch is really bringing in cheap third world labor to a province that already has unemployed Canadian labor. I really can't believe Jason Kenney referred to Brooks, Alberta, as his example of a success story.
Brooks is a good example. They have managed to do this partly because of the large meatpacking plant there that has been very proactive in recruiting newcomers. But this is the single most effective way that we can help to revitalize economic growth in smaller communities.
Brooks, he's really using that Brooks meatpacking. Brooks is a small town in Alberta that decided to hire cheap foreign workers in their meatpacking plant rather than to hire Canadians for a couple of bucks an hour more. And they thought Somalis would be the perfect people to work in Brooks, Alberta. So no surprise that it has been a disaster. The crime rate in that town doubled. Alberta is now famous for having exported Somali terrorists to ISIS. But just from a plain old economic point of view, which is being touted here as the rationale, why? How is bringing in cheap foreign labor, which is the story of the Brooks meatpacking plant, that's exactly the story he refers to, how is it a success that you've got some employed low-cost labor from Somalia in Brooks? This is so weird. It's like Kenny's running for prime minister, for the Liberals, you know, appeasing Ahmed Hassan's Somali. He's got that nailed down. Appeasing the CBC, appeasing migrant lobby groups. Alberta doesn't need more migrants, especially for economics. Here's a chart showing that the province has had nearly zero net immigration for the past 5 years, as in people are leaving Alberta almost as quickly as they're coming in anyways, because there's no economic opportunity there. People are getting up and leaving the province, and he wants to bring in more Somalis. Why is he doing this? He actually said he's going to lobby Justin Trudeau and Ahmed Hassan to ask for more.
Listen, I would happily lobby the federal government to increase Alberta's allotment under the provincial nominee program. As federal minister, I took it from 1,200 to 5,000, quadrupled it, which took the number of immigrants coming through the program from about 4,000 to 22,000. That helped to double the overall number of immigrants coming to Alberta from about 21,000 in 2005 to on average 42,000 when I left as immigration minister. And I'm proud of having doubled immigration levels to Alberta, partly by giving Alberta a 400% increase in its nominee. But since then, Alberta has been flat.
What is going on here? The oil patch is hurting. The pipeline industry is dead. Coal is being positively euthanized by the NDP. Pipelines are not being built. It's collapsing the prices. What's going on here?
I know a lot of immigrants that came here with high hopes, but couldn't find jobs. And they've ended up leaving for Toronto or Vancouver. That's a terrible shame.
Yeah, I guess that's sad. But why is that more sad if it happens to foreign citizens than when it happens to Canadians, to Albertans? And how is bringing thousands of more people gonna change that? What is even going on here? Alberta is having a very tough time. Albertans are. Albertans are homeless. Albertans are on welfare. Albertans need jobs. It is sad that the unlimited pool of people around the world, the 7 billion people who could come to Canada if they could. It's sad that 7 billion foreigners can't get jobs in Alberta, sure, but it is more sad that Albertans can't. To focus on this, to say this is a priority, to make this announcement, to say he's going to lobby Trudeau for more migrants, that is not real. That is not what Albertans are asking for. That's what the CBC wants? That's Jason Kenney trying to win the love of the CBC? Trying to prove how woke he is, so woke that he's going to lobby Justin Trudeau for more migrants? Jason Kenney is more scared of the CBC than he is of anything else. If you're wondering how he's going to govern, I think that's what you need to watch. I've never, never in my life heard someone in small town Alberta say they want Trudeau to pour more migrants into their town. Pretty sure Brooks is a cautionary tale, not a role model. If you want to know what Jason Kenney responds to, don't look to a carbon tax rally or a pipeline convoy. I don't think he likes those. Look to what they're gossiping about at the CBC headquarters in Toronto. Look to what the media party is twittering about online. That's what Jason Kenney responds to. Please tell me if I'm wrong here, because I wish I was, but I don't think I am. That's an excerpt from the Ezra Levant Show every day.
Pretty depressing, but that's what passes for so-called conservative leadership. All too often in Canada and other places. Ezra Levant went through it very well. We need more immigrants in small town Alberta. And he's saying, but people are leaving. Why? There aren't any jobs. And immigrants are going to bring jobs? No, they're not. They're going to take jobs. Anyway, very well done. Here's an item. This woman who's gotten an awful lot of media attention. This is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. A good friend of mine who's a psychiatrist said, I call her Alexandria Occasional Cortex. In other words, very occasionally she actually betrays evidence of a brain. Anyway, guess what? Ocasio may in fact, despite the Spanish name, not be even nominally Christian. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez claims Sephardic Jewish roots. And this is from Fast Forward, and it's a website that reads through a Jewish lens. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the newly elected firebrand congresswoman, has revealed for the first time that she has Sephardic Jewish heritage. The 28-year-old Democrat said her distant ancestors fled the Spanish Inquisition to emigrate to Puerto Rico, where her immediate family roots were until they moved to New York City. Quote, generations and generations ago, my family consisted of Sephardic Jews. So many people practiced Catholicism, although I think she means Catholicism, on the exterior, but on the interior they continued to practice Judaism. In other words, they were deceitful. at a Hanukkah event, in a moving speech, this is a tweet from Natalie Krupkin, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez shared that her family were Sephardic Jews who fled to Puerto Rico. So many of our destinies are tied beyond our understanding, she said. I don't know what she means, but okay. It's believed to be the first time Ocasio-Cortez has publicly mentioned her Sephardic roots. Haaretz, so that's a major and reputable newspaper in Israel. They reported this first this past Sunday. She didn't explain why she'd apparently never mentioned the issue before. In recent months, she's burst onto the national political scene with a leftist critique of the Democratic establishment, and it stands on a variety of issues, including Israel and the Palestinians. Ocasio-Cortez told Haaretz that she didn't plan to talk about her family's history on Sunday either. Sometimes I feel the space, I feel the moment, as she explained. Okay, very New Agey of her. Ocasio-Cortez, who pulled off a stunning upset over Democratic powerhouse Joe Crowley in a primary last spring, suggested that her relatives and other Puerto Rican families hid menorahs and other artifacts of Jewish practice in their homes on the overwhelmingly Catholic island. She used her unusual family history to draw a parallel between the polyglot history of Puerto Rico, where many trace their roots, to a mix of Spanish colonizers, indigenous natives, Native Americans, and black slaves. Well, most of the natives had died out, actually, in Puerto Rico, but don't want to spoil a good story. So many of our destinies are tied beyond our understanding, she said. Speaking next to a Hanukkah menorah, Ocasio-Cortez was addressing a friendly audience of Jews for Racial and Economic Justice event in New York City. A few gasps and an audible, "Oh, really?" greeted her initial statement that she has Sephardic roots. A crying baby and a wandering toddler later interrupted her speech. The claim of Sephardic heritage echoes the claim by her political ally, Julia Salazar, who snatched a Brooklyn State Senate seat from an incumbent establishment Democrat. Salazar says her father's Colombian family had Sephardic roots, but her brother disputes the assertion. Ocasio-Cortez raised hackles among supporters of Israel when she decried the killings of dozens of unarmed Palestinians in Gaza as, quote, a massacre by Israeli troops. The fanatical supporters of Israel are a fifth column in the United States. They are more concerned about a foreign state, namely the state of Israel, than they are America, and their power is being outrageous. Along with fellow newbie lawmakers Ilhan Omar, who's a Somali Muslim, Minneapolis, and Rashida Tlaib of Detroit, Ocasio-Cortez may shake up the normally one-sided conversation about Israel in the new Congress, but they will have little actual power to affect policy. Tlaib has said she will not go on a trip to Israel sponsored by the powerful pro-Israel AIPAC lobby, and instead plans to lead her own trip to the occupied Palestinian territories. Well, okay, as far as it goes, I guess kind of good for her. Anyway, kind of interesting. Apparently, Salazar claimed that it was her. She's in the New York State Senate. Claimed that it was her Sephardic roots that inspired her to enter politics. Interesting. I think it's always interesting to know the affiliations of people who run their mouths in public. So kind of interesting bit of information. Of course, people might well ask, why did you only mention it now? Here's a man hidden in trunk in plot to cross the U.S. border. A Toronto, a Toronto area settlement worker could face jail time in the United States after attempting to smuggle a fatal refugee claimant across the border in the trunk of a car. Court documents show that Donna Pham, that's P-H-A-M, she's Vietnamese, pleaded guilty this week to one count of conspiracy to defraud the U.S., an offense that carries a maximum sentence of 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. However, the documents indicate that because Pham has accepted responsibility and has one or fewer prior convictions, her sentence is likely to be between 6 and 12 months with a fine of $4,000 to $40,000. An agreed statement of fact says that Pham and a friend drove to the Rainbow Bridge border crossing in Niagara Falls, New York, just after noon on January the 6th. During the inspection, a border guard found a man in the trunk of Pham's car. There was a man in the trunk. Well, I didn't know he was there. The man, identified only as MP, was a citizen of Senegal. That's in Africa. He's a citizen of Senegal and had twice been refused non-immigrant visas at the U.S. consulate in Dakar. His refugee claim in Canada had also been denied, and he was ordered to leave Canada by January the 7th. The defendant did not declare or present for an inspection an individual who was secreted in the trunk of her vehicle, the document said. Yeah, she was smuggling, eh? The MP, that's the, he's illegal in both countries. Not, it wasn't, he couldn't get a visa to go to the United States, and it'd been ruled, his refugee claim to Canada had been turned down. MP and the defendant met in Canada prior to the defendant driving to the Rainbow Bridge port of entry. An unidentified co-conspirator in Canada had arranged for MP to be smuggled into the U.S. in Pham's car, the agreed statement of facts said. An affidavit submitted by a special agent with the Department of Homeland Security said Border Patrol officers found a man concealed under a coat in the trunk. The man's fingerprints matched a profile in a government database. MP told a customs officer he promised to pay Pham $100 U.S. if he made it across the border. Well, boy, smuggling is cheap. Okay, but if anything, the story gets even better. Pham, who works at the Newcomer Center of Peel in Mississauga, I used to live there, that's where Port Credit is. So she's an immigrant settlement worker. Told officers she had no idea there was someone in her trunk and didn't know how they would have gotten in. The document said, "You really? There's a guy in my trunk. I don't know how he got there. What, did he have the keys to your car, maybe?" No. Her friend recalled that they were traveling to the Seneca Casino that day and had stopped at a gas station to get coffee and then at the Casino Niagara on the Canadian side of the border. Two women then went to a Starbucks and the duty-free store to shop for perfume before trying to enter the United States. So a Vietnamese immigrant settlement worker is supposedly paid $100 to smuggle this Senegalese illegal across the border. Okay. I hope, though I doubt it, she will face serious problems when she gets back to Canada. Because you know what we were told 20 years ago by the then Jewish Minister of Immigration, who refused to actually stop six rusty boatloads of Chinese illegals. We were told, though, the real problem was not these people. The problem was human traffickers. People, in other words, people smuggling. That was the real problem. Boy, we were going to crack down on people smuggling. You've got to believe this one. Well, in the intervening 20 years, very few people have actually been prosecuted for it. And of those who have, I don't think anybody has received a sentence of longer than 6 months. There was at one point actually talk of life in prison. Boy, we're going to crack down on those smugglers. Well, hee-haw. Now, a immigration worker in Canada is caught. She's pleaded guilty. It's okay. Not just caught, but has admitted to smuggling an illegal into the United States. He's actually an illegal from Canada, too. But I don't know exactly if Canadian law would apply, but it'll be interesting to see if there really is any commentary. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Go and take my musical. This is an old Ray Price song by a great lady, Heather Miles. Down. You were my fortress. Johnny Jack, rather. I misidentified her. That's Dottie Jack, not Dottie West. Here's another one by Dottie Jack, Cellist Heart.
Through the years, his memory will haunt me.
back, and that's Jealous Heart. Gotta play one more tune here. A lighter shade of blue, also with Donny Jack.
You walked out so many times and left me with a worried mind, confused, alone, not knowing what to do. Then you come back and I forgive, and heartaches mend, but memories live. Each time I turn a lighter shade of blue, 'cause I don't hurt the way I used to hurt. Don't cry the way I used to cry. Could it be a sign I'm getting over you? There'll come a day, it won't be long, you'll come back and find me gone. Each time I turn a lighter shade, I don't hurt the way I used to hurt. Don't cry the way I used to cry. Could it be a sign I'm getting over you?
Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave, our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever.